Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am the host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell working it out. And this is just a great opportunity to kind of kick off the offseason. We got into wrapping it up last week, and now we're going to look at spinning it forward. And there's a whole lot that we have to look at. I'm here to tell you guys that are on the bridge, ready to jump because of the cap situation. I'm here to tell you guys, don't do it. We have Mike Herndon from Broadway Sports Media coming aboard, and he's going to really let you know why this cap issue is not a big-time thing to worry about. So we'll have him there. Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL insider, coming on to talk a little shop. Give us a national perspective of this Titans team. And I'm going to ask her some of her thoughts about you. That's right. Each of you, ladies and gentlemen, who interact with her on social media, you're going to see what she thinks. I'm curious what she'll have to say, but we're going to get into that. And as always, we got Run TMC. We'll just take a look at the receivers and just player by player, break it on down. And I can't wait, man. This is going to be a fun show. So let's start off, actually, because there's a big-time thing that the Titans are going to have to do, and that's find an offensive coordinator. And, wow, Arthur Smith, he has moved on to the Falcons. I think that was a perfect fit, right, because of, you know, some of the similarities as far as what Mike Arthur Smith was able to do here with the Titans and what Matt Ryan did well in 2016. But there's just a lot that, you know, goes into being a head coach. And Arthur Smith learned from each stop that he made, just different things he was able to pull. And I thought it was really interesting because we got to get on his conference call with the Falcons. And I asked him just straight up, you know, what is it that you learned from Mike Vrabel as far as becoming a head coach? And here's what he had to say.
Coach Art, congrats on this. You know, I'm going to hate to not have you here in Nashville. Yeah. But that being said, what are some of the things that you learned so much from Mike Vrabel to help prepare you for this opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I can't thank Mike Vrabel enough for having the faith in me to give me the shot to be the play caller. You know, Mike Vrabel, he holds every player on that roster accountable. And there's a lot of great leadership lessons I learned from Mike. He was very flexible with things we did. I'll miss that relationship a lot. He had a huge impact on my career. But I'm not Mike Vrabel, you know, I've been around. There's only one Mike Vrabel, and I don't think I can have the same temperament he does and the ability he has at practice to get one group and go right into it to the next. So.
And then to follow that up, you've seen multiple coaches install their culture and establish that. So for you, what will be the key to doing that successfully and immediately? Because, you know, NFL, not for long. That's how it works. So I'm sure you want to hit the ground running.
Sure. That'll be the message early on, you know, what the expectations are and how we're going to hold guys accountable. But, you know, you don't come in here day one. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, anything good is a foundation you got to build day by day. And you know, that meeting team, you know, the first meeting we have, depending on what the league rules are in the spring, that's a slow build as we go through it, building up to the season.
So, you know, I think you would struggle to find someone that would have something bad to say about Coach Arthur Smith. You know, Coach Art has done an excellent job here. And, you know, it will be tough to see him go. I hate seeing him go because, you know, being able to talk to him and have the conversations about scheme and just different things after his presser, right, when we were – blessed to be able to be in the building and have those conversations one-on-one. They were great, man. He was definitely someone that I really enjoyed. mean, the man didn't leave us, right? Like, he's still on the planet. So he is someone that I definitely enjoyed getting to talk to. And it's unfortunate that, you know, he's moved on. But, hey, bigger and better, you know what I'm saying? And he earned the right to be a head coach, and here he is. So I think really the question is just, all right, what's next for the Titans offense? And the first thing that this coordinator that comes in has to look at is what Arthur Smith did with this offense, the balance, right? The fifth best rushing season in the history of the game, 2,027 yards from Derrick Henry, yet still had almost two guys hit 1,000 yards, right? Corey Davis fell 16 yards short. A.J. Brown, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. It is what it is there. Ryan Tannehill had an outstanding season. So I think you have to look at just how that whole stew was put in there. You know what I mean? How he mixed all the flavors and seasonings and made it happen. But it all comes back down to one thing, and I'm glad Arthur Smith, Coach Art, I'm glad that he understood where it all starts. And, you know, he had a pretty interesting quote in his presser. Listen to what he had to say about Derrick Henry. I thought this was really good.
We adapted to Derrick. Like I said, there's only one Derrick Henry, and he's like having Shaquille O'Neal in his prime. And so, you know, you got to have to feed the big fella. And certainly we did that in Tennessee, and I'm certain that can be different for them. I mean, like I said, every year is different.
So you heard what he said, right? So I guess that would make Derrick Henry is Shaq. Tannehill would have to be Kobe, and A.J. Brown is Big Shot Bob, right? Robert Ori. And let's just say, all right, we'll round it out. Corey Davis is Derek Fisher.
I was getting ready to say, yeah.
And there you have it right there.
No Samaki Walkers on this team.
Nah, none of them. Not. None of them, man. You know, shout out University of Kentucky, but or was it Louisville?
Louisville. Shout out to one of the greatest draft suits of all time.
Yeah.
That's what he's, I guess, most known for, that all-white suit.
Yeah, it was nice and clean. But I tell you, that's what the next coordinator has to look at. So when you look at what's next for this Titans offense, I think it's maintaining balance, maintaining the importance of running the football, maintaining red zone efficiency, and I think you're going to have to be creative scheme-wise. And I don't want to get this twisted. Now, A.J. Brown, you know, Corey Davis, these are all guys, Derrick Henry, you know, these are all players that can make plays themselves, but how much better is it? I mean, how many times did we see them on, and this is a perfect example, last year or 2 years ago, I remember, I want to say it was against the Bucks. I forget who it was against, but I remember they had the ball on the right hash and they had a receiver on the left. It was Corey Davis, right? And a tight end, Jonnu Smith. Corey Davis motioned from the field side to the boundary. So the left side to the right side, you had all the field, all the air and opportunity to work. That corner went with them. So now you have all of this space out there, right? So they did outside. It was one of the sweep plays, right? You had the guard pulling, Nate Davis, and you had Jonnu Smith. And it's funny, like, I didn't even think about this till just now, but I remember the play so vividly and how well it was executed. And Jonnu Smith sealed the edge. He sealed the DE, the defensive end, and they tossed it to Derrick Henry. He got in that alley, stiff-armed the linebacker real quick. And, you know, you had Nate Davis blocking downfield, and he crushed the DB, and it was like a 29-yard run. That's scheme and ability. You look at Corey Davis when he had the touchdown. What was that, against the Lions, right? So many times people were looking at, okay, yeah, they have the play-action dagger route combo, right? And you got the double cross. You got A.J. Brown running a shallow one and then the dig over top with Corey Davis. Teams started to see that. They recognized the pattern and that safety, you know, would cheat up, and that's what happened. The safety cheated up. Corey Davis started to run the dig, outside foot in the ground, exploded upfield, 75-yard touchdown. That scheme to take advantage of a player's skill set, that's what this next guy has to do. It's imperative to do those type of things. Jonnu Smith in the backfield. You have to have that creativity to utilize guys like Jonnu Smith in multiple ways. You need jet sweeps with A.J. Brown. You need that, right? You need to incorporate so many things. Timing screen passes really well. Now, granted, Coach Art was a little trigger happy with the screen, but there were times where it was very well timed and it resulted in a big play. Derrick Henry, you know, he a couple times. You look at the season opener 2 years ago. They had the screen play. It was a 70-plus yard touchdown. These are the things that this next coordinator has to do. Now, whether that's a guy from the coaching staff that's already here or an external guy, that remains to be seen. There are options both ways. Obviously, external, right? You know, you got Pep Hamilton. You got Dave Ragone, who may end up, you know, with the with Arthur Smith in Atlanta. There's an abundance of guys. You will have your choices to make. And I think this Titans job is very attractive. Why? Because you're going to be able to call the plays. You're going to have almost full autonomy of that offense. So if you're an up-and-comer, this is attractive because this is your opportunity to, all right, this is how I do things on offense. This is my scheme. This is what I do. You can showcase that and introduce the league to it. You have the results like Arthur Smith had over 2 years. Guess what? You're going to be the one going to someone else being a head coach. If you're an established guy, you could come in. I don't approve of the move, but I'll use Jay Gruden as an example. You bring Jay Gruden in or an established guy like him. Okay, this is you guys know what I do on offense. Here's why it's going to run so well with this group of players. You don't have to worry about a coach saying, hey, you know, you got to do this, this. No, it's full autonomy. So that's a very, very attractive thing for this offense. I think that's where the Titans go next. I think they'll still be productive. Now, I don't know about scoring 30 points a game, but I think they'll still be productive. And I'm sorry. People, you know, got frustrated with Coach Art after that last game, and I get it after the Ravens game, but don't get it twisted. He had a lot to do with the production that they had on offense, and the arrow is only pointing up for the Atlanta Falcons. I'm an Arthur Smith fan, so I'm going to be watching the Falcons a bit more because I love what he does creative-wise and everything. So that's really much the book, you know, on the offense. That's where I think they're going. Before we go to the break, you know, we have to make the suggestion. Search on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Talking with TD. Search. Once you find it, subscribe. You subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you. We'll be right back.
This is J.M. Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
What is that, Dre? It's the formula.
Yeah. Perfect music for this segment, the formula. And I tell you what, our next guest put together a nice little formula to generate $50 million in salary cap space. So for all you guys, Jarrett Stillman, who are focusing on the end of the world, the apocalypse coming because the Titans are up against the salary cap, I have an answer for you. So our next guest, Herndon, actually has the answer. And, Mike, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good, TD. It's an interesting world, the whole salary cap deal, and the Titans are definitely tighter against it, but luckily there's some ways around that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I wanted to bring you on because was it last week or the week before I was talking about it was last week, a week ago today. I was talking about you know, how they could clear up some space and how looking at the salary cap is not something that, you know, needs to be the apocalypse. And I was on the air with Jared and I told him, you know, don't worry about it. You could kick the can down the road. And it's something that I saw specifically covering the Eagles. Now, granted, the chickens have come home to roost, right? Because they are well above the salary cap right now, the Eagles, that is. But they're a good example of some of the things that you went over in this post. So let's jump right into it. What is your outlook as far as the Titans and their cap health? I thought it was really good how you focused on that initially.
Yeah, so the interesting thing for the Titans, you know, you look at the salary cap space and you see that $6.5 million or, you know, it varies slightly depending on what site you're looking at. But, roughly somewhere between $6 to $8 million, dollars worth of space, and you panic. You're like, oh, they've got to resign Corey Davis, Jayon Brown, all these other guys, how are they going to add to the roster? How are they going to go get pass rushers? But the cap space is just one part of your total financial outlook for a team. And fortunately for the Titans, they've been really responsible with their cap management over the years and also just the contracts that they've given out. They have not, I know they've whiffed on some free agent signings and stuff like that, but they don't have a whole lot of really bad misses in free agency where they spent big guaranteed dollars and they just got a dud. So fortunately, that leaves them, with very little as far as percentage of, guaranteed money that's left on deals. And then you also got to look at, what the percentage of signing bonus is to total salary, because the signing bonus is stuff that you can't really mess with at that point. But salary you can manipulate. So that's kind of the way you look at it. And the Titans are among the top 10 in salary cap health. So they've got a lot of flexibility and a lot of ability to create space because they haven't been up against the cap in recent years. They don't have a ton of contracts where they're already kind of over-leveraged, kind of like the Eagles, the Saints are another good example. They've been kicking that can down the road for 5-6 years and trying to extend that Super Bowl window, and the Titans haven't had to do that. So they're in a lot better shape to continue, to create a little wiggle room than some of those teams that have been doing it for a while.
Right, no doubt about it. And last year, the Eagles really, opened up some space, and that allowed them to sign a guy like a Jovan Hargrave, which was a big move at that time. So there's definitely opportunities for this team to be able to add some players. Obviously, the need is there, right? Edge rusher, receiver, pending the Corey Davis situation. Then, as you mentioned, the free agents that they have that are pending. I mean, we're talking about 20-plus free agents. I would say probably 4 or 5 of them are guys that, really should have a strong consideration to be brought back. But that being said, when you go into – and I don't want to give the whole formula, right, because I want people to go to the post and read it, because it's very good information. And this is something that, as we get into the start of the new league year, ladies and gentlemen, you need to bookmark what Mike Herndon has written for you. And that's who we're talking to right now, Broadway Sports Media Group. Just look at one contract, and how they could open up some space with it. You could do Derrick Henry's, you could do Tannehill's, whichever one you want to do, but just Cliff Notes version of how that would work.
Yeah, so let's do Derrick Henry, because he's got some nice even numbers, right? So he's 4 years, $50 million, and out of that, $12 million was his signing bonus, and the rest is kind of divvied up by yearly salaries. So what they can do, the signing bonus for cap purposes gets spread out evenly over the 4 years. So that $12 million will count $3 million this past season. It'll count $3 million next year, the year after that, the year after that. So that is locked in. You can't do anything about it. But what they can do is manipulate the salary. So next year, Derrick Henry is scheduled to have a regular salary, getting the game checks during the week of $10.5 million. But if the Titans want to, they can approach him and say, look, I can give you all but the veteran minimum of that money. So the veteran minimum for a player of Henry's experience is roughly $1 million, just for round numbers purposes. So the Titans can say, look, we're going to reduce your salary to $1 million for this year, but we're going to give you a $9.5 million bonus. And so you get $9.5 million right now. You don't have to wait for the game checks to come in and all that. That's guaranteed. That's in your bank account. We can't, if something were to happen, nothing can happen to that money. It's done. So obviously that's the appealing part for Henry. But the appealing part for the Titans doing it, that is they can now take that money, since it's now bonus money, that bonus money can be spread over the final 3 years of the deal. So instead of his cap number being, $10.5 million salary plus his $3 million signing bonus charge for a total of $13.5 million cap charge for the year, you can spread that money out, and now your cap charge drops down to just roughly above $7 million. So bang, just like that, you save $6 million against the cap, and you basically doubled your cap space on paper without doing anything to your roster. And that's a deal that Henry would be, you know, crazy not to take. He, you know, anybody, ask anybody, you want the money in your pocket right now, not waiting on it. So, you know, it doesn't change his money. It does, it's not a, you know, pay cut for him. It's just, it works for both sides. But obviously the downside of it is it kicks his cap charges up in 2022 and 2023. But in this case, with this season, with the COVID cap numbers coming down for the first time in a decade, this is the season I think it makes sense that if you were ever going to kick the can down the road, this is the season to do it, right? Because you've got new TV contracts coming in. You got the 17th game coming in. You've got the extra playoff games happening already this year, but really that'll get tacked on in the future. The salary cap's going to jump in 2022 and 2023 and beyond. So if you can kick some of that money from this year into the next couple of years, I think it's smart to do it. The Titans have responsible contracts for most of their core on the books, at least through 2022. So I think they're in a good spot to be able to do some of this stuff. And obviously, you can do it with guys besides Henry. You can do it with Tannehill. You can do it with Lawan, Byard, Saffold, any of these guys with kind of a big contract that you really haven't messed with yet. You can go in and take some of that salary, convert it to bonus, and pay for it later, basically, for cap purposes.
Right, and as you mentioned, if there's any year to do that, this is the year, because it's almost like it's almost like you're maintaining your expenses and controlling your spending while you're waiting for a raise. Just to kind of correlate it to regular people, you know that you got a raise coming in the future, so you just say, okay, well, you know what, that $24 subscription to MLB.com, I'm going to hold off on that. You know, but I know I'll be able to get it next year. That's really essentially what it boils down to. And I don't know, as a player, you know, if I was Derrick Henry, I would love to be able to open up my bank app on my phone and just see a couple commas up in there. You know, so it's always a good thing to be able to do that. So that's great for both parties. Now, that's not the only avenue that this team can take. The one that we all know about, right, is releasing veteran players. And Adam Humphries, of course, is a guy that, hey, I mean, like, he's awesome to talk to in the locker room. He's that Linus blanket, you know, for a quarterback. He's so reliable when he's on the field. But the problem is we're not seeing him on the field as much. So what happens if they were to release a guy like Adam Humphries?
Yeah, so the key numbers are obviously, you know, whatever his signing bonus was, you're still going to be on the hook for that. And whatever that was spread out to the next year, which Humphries has 2 years left on his deal. So that would accelerate onto this year's cap. But for the Titans, if they did release Humphries, his cap hit of $9.75 million gets dropped to $5 million. So you're saving close to $5 million against the cap by releasing him if they do that. And like you said, I think that's a situation where they almost have to. Just I like Humphries. I think he's a good football player. You know, his contract was always maybe a little bit of a reach to me. But, you know, I could understand why they got there and how they got there. But with, you know, the injuries and especially the concussion thing, which is just scary on a very human level, you know, that it's hard for me to see them keeping him on the contract that he currently has, just because, you know, it's a big cap hit for a lot of uncertainty at this point.
One other veteran, because you have two. As I said, we want them to read the article, but one other veteran, we'll leave the other one a mystery. You have to go and read it to get the third guy. But one other veteran that you would say is somebody to look out for as a salary cap cut.
Yeah, so I'll talk about the most interesting one to me, which is Malcolm Butler. Because heading into this season, I figured that this was a probably 99% chance this was his final year as a Titan. But with what he put on the field this year, I think he's made a good case for himself to stick around for sure. But he is going to be 31 next season. He's playing a position that does not typically age well into the 30s.
And he's got a $14.2 million cap hit, which is one of the biggest on the team. Mm-hmm. The Titans could cut him and save $10 million. But, you know, to me, I would hope, and I talked a little bit about this in this piece, I would hope there's a way, there's got to be a middle ground between paying the full freight for what his current contract is and cutting him to me. I think if you could find a way to maybe reduce his cap hit and keep him around, that's the ideal scenario. I don't know what that magic number might be, but somewhere between $14.2 million and $4.2 million, there's got to be a place where they could both be happy, I would think. And I think the Titans, it's just hard for me to see them going into next season without him at this yeah. point because of how well he played and what he did for this defense, which, you know, obviously struggled quite a bit. And he was a real bright spot for it. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him.
And not only how well he played, but how much depth they lacked in the secondary, right? Mm-hmm. Christian Fulton's going to be a player. Don't get it twisted. He's going to be a good player. But I would think that that's going to come more towards the end of year two and into year three. But then you have the situation with Adoree Jackson. You have Breon Borders, who showed flashes, but really, Chris Jackson, I mean, really, you need to maintain depth at corner. So I think absolutely they need to have both Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler back. You just made a good case for Butler. Other thing that I'm looking at, and I'm curious what your take is on this, Mike. What's the top number? Like, where does it top out for Corey Davis as far as an annual projection salary-wise? What would make you like, you know what? Gonna have to, you know, move on.
You know, that's a tough question because I think talent wise, I think Corey Davis can. I still think his best football's ahead of him. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would say maybe in that 12 to 14 million range is where I'd start to get a little bit queasy if we're going north of that. You know, obviously they didn't pick up the 5th-year option, which would have been I think 15.7 or 15.8 million. So they weren't comfortable at that number a year ago. Now he's put some better tape out there over the past 12 months, so that may change their view on him ultimately. But I'd say in that 12 to 14 range is about the top that I would be willing to go with him currently.
Okay, so that being said, you got your selection. Corey Davis, and we'll look at some stats. We'll look at last year's numbers. I just want to pick your brain a little bit here. Right. Well, look at last year's numbers. We know Corey Davis, 65 receptions, 984 yards, 5 touchdowns. Now, mind you, 15.1 yards per reception. These are all career highs. The receptions it tied him for a career high. Everything else was a career high. Now I'm gonna present another option. Now, mind you, Corey Davis is what's Corey? 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's right.
This next player is 30 years old. He played in all 16 games last year. He had 115 targets, right? So 76 receptions, 978 yards, 12.9 yards per reception, 9 touchdowns. That guy is Marvin Jones. So
interesting.
And this is the thing. Now I'm a little biased. I've been a Marvin Jones fan since his days at Cal. I've always liked Marvin Jones, so I'm a little biased here. But what I like about him is he spent the early part of his career eating on the opposite side of AJ Green. There's another AJ with a colorful last name, and AJ Brown here, right? So I'm just looking at the numbers, right? Corey Davis at $12 million, Marvin Jones at $9 to $10 million. Where are you going?
I'd probably have to lean Marvin. Now I think there's some other interesting options out there too. I think a guy like Curtis Samuel could be interesting here. You know, he's kind of a speedy, got a little bit of that gadget guy
yes.
To his game. So I think there's some other options. Like if and frankly. Part of me wonders if Corey Davis is going to want to be a Titan because he's always going to be an A.J. Brown shadow. I mean, mm-hmm. that die is cast at this point. And he's a talented enough guy that you still think maybe if he goes to the right place, he could be that wide receiver one, that top guy. And I wonder if he isn't going to look for a situation like that, in regardless of what the Titans offer him financially, if he's not going to want that bigger opportunity, that bigger spotlight. Not that he's a guy that I think necessarily craves the spotlight. He's been, you know, a head down, hard worker and done all the right things, stayed out of the complaining about targets, trap and all that during his entire time here. But deep down, everybody thinks that they're the top guy. And I wonder if he's not going to want to go to a place that gives him that label.
Well, you know, not to put a little salt in the game for Titans fans, but, you know, the Jaguars, they're about to get Trevor Lawrence. They have some money. They need a top guy. Ooh, that would be something else, you know, because their receiver, man, his name, the LSU kid, it slips my mind. DJ Chark. Yeah. I believe he's going to be a free agent as well. So, yeah, there's some decisions that, you know, are definitely going to have to be made. I can't wait for this offseason. It's going to be great to see how this whole thing works out. It's just thinking about, you know, where they go and what they do. It's going to be tough. I don't envy John Robinson or Mike Vrabel at all because there's so many things they have to fill. But we'll see what happens. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you consistently stay up to beat with everything that's going on. And one way that you could do that is by checking out Mike Herndon's work on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. It's just BroadwaySports.com, right? I have it bookmarked, so I don't even have to memorize it. I just hit the logo on my...
It is BroadwaySportsMedia.com.
Okay.
We're still in negotiations with the people that own BroadwaySports.com, which, funny story enough, is a bowling alley in New York. So. Wow. We're trying to pry that away from them at some point.
The things you have to do, man, with the internet, boy, I tell you what. But yeah, Mike, I appreciate you coming on. You know we're going to do this. We said we were going to do this again after the first time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an example of us following through on our word, and we're going to keep it going. So appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Happy to do it anytime, TD.
Yes, sir.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
What is it? You know, Elijah, one time, Chris and I, we were walking down Broadway. This was like 2 weeks ago. We were walking down Broadway, right? And we had just passed that little cookie store. Uh-huh. Where they had the ice cream and all that. And this kid came out with his dad, and his dad stopped us in our tracks. And you know what he said?
What'd he say?
Oh, my God. You look like Manute Bol.
Oh, no.
They said that to you?
No, you.
I got a story for you, man. I went to McDonald's, right? And it's like, you on the show with TD? I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, I love y'all's show. I was like, it's great. He's like, but don't he look like Robert Parrish? I'm like, yeah, that's him. That's him. I said, he's Robert the Chief.
Yo, man, that's hilarious,
man. That's good, man. How you doing, man?
I'm chilling, man. And if you, for some reason, don't know who we're on the air with, that's Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. A Tyrone Hill look alike, but it's all good. We got him on here. Old Kevin Willis looking fool, but it's all right. It's all right. This all week,
Donald Driver.
We're gonna fight through the comedy.
You gotta have a little fun with all this stuff going on.
Hey, man, you gotta no choice but to have fun,
no doubt,
man.
No doubt.
It's a better day that you know we have coming. So definitely. Yeah. You know, appreciate the good times.
Always, man. Always.
So, we said we're going to do this each week, right? Continue to run TMC segment. Last week, obviously, we wrapped it up with the rushing attack and what Derrick Henry did. And I think it's only fitting, right? We get into the wide receivers, and we'll look at what this Titans team has on the roster, maybe where they go from here. And there are three free agents, free agents. You got Corey Davis, of course, Khalif Raymond. Both will be, you know, unrestricted free agents pending no extension done. And Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is a restricted free agent. It's so crazy looking at their ages.
Yeah.
Westbrook-Ikhine just finished his first year in the league. He's 24. Corey Davis just finished his fourth. He's 26. That's crazy. But when you look at this group, let's start from the top and just go with AJ Brown. And what's your take on him? Where can he excel? Ascend to it as a wide receiver on this team.
I think Corey Davis had a phenomenal year. Everybody was talking about the things that he needed to improve on this year, and that's exactly what he did, about getting off the pressure and beating the good cornerbacks. I mean, look at the year he had. He had 70 catches for 1,075 and 11 TDs. I mean, everybody kept talking about that the Tennessee Titans need a number one wide receiver, need somebody that can go get the ball, that can make plays, and that's exactly what we saw out of A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the only thing that will stop him is injuries. I mean, you know, I'm not saying his game is perfect. I'm not saying that it's all the way there, but it's pretty doggone close. I mean, look at some of the clutch plays that he made against Baltimore. He catches a slant. He takes three guys in the end zone. Then we go against the Houston Texans when we're thinking that they're going to go to overtime. They throw a bomb to him for 52 yards. Big play guy, big players make big plays in big games, and that's exactly what A.J. Brown is.
No doubt about it. And that's exactly what I sent him a text after that game. And I said that literally, big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games, and that's what you did. And, it's straight up. He is the number one on that offense, and there's no denying that. But every Batman needs a Robin. And
no doubt.
With Corey Davis, he has settled into that Robin role, you know, and just seeing him, I'm trying to figure out the best way to word it. Right, seeing him have so little impact in the last three games.
I know.
Where do you go from there? How do you look at that as part of the big picture?
You know, I know everybody's talking about the last three games, and I agree with you 100%. But the one thing that he gives this offense is the chemistry. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you start putting different guys in different positions, say we let Corey Davis walk, we bring somebody in. He might not mess with A.J. Brown. He might not mesh with all the other receivers. But if you look at Davis and Brown, they mesh together. They're big receivers. They can make plays. And I know the three games that Davis played, they wasn't good. But he still almost had 1,000 yards. He had 984, 65 catches, and 5 touchdowns. That's still a pretty good doggone year. Even though the three games, I think two of them, he had 2 donuts. So that just tells you that he's capable of making those plays. And now I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think that he was going through a little bit of injuries, but also I think he had a heavy heart by losing his brother.
Yeah.
So when you're losing, and I'm not making an excuse, when you lose your brother, you lose somebody significant to you, your thought process is not good. I mean, if you look at some of the passes that he dropped on third down, he didn't even look like the same player. So that shows you that if he just clears his mind and get back to playing like he was playing at the beginning of the season, I don't think you let this guy walk.
So, I mean, what would you think, and – I know as a former player, you don't want to be in anybody's pocket, right? But, you know, just kind of thinking where you would picture him coming in. Where do you see his value being?
I see his value is huge because somebody's going to value this dude. He's big and he's coming into his prime and he had a pretty good season. It all depends on what Corey wants to do. If Corey wants to say, you know what, I want top dollar, I want this, but I don't see him doing that. I just say his agent or he talks to his agent and say, listen, I want to be a Tennessee Titans. I want to keep this boat rolling. I want to stay with the chemistry with A.J. Brown and Tannehill and that big number 22 Henry in the backfield. So if he says, you know what, just give me – I'm not saying he's going to do this. Give me $8 or $9 million or a year, and let's roll from there.
Yeah. So that's the top two guys. And then from there you go to Adam Humphries.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. what do you do? I mean – when he's in the game, he's productive. I mean, look at some of the plays he made the last couple of years. Kansas City makes a winning touchdown. Indianapolis, you know, scores a touchdown.
Jacksonville.
He's on the field. But you can't be productive if you're unavailable. And I think that's kind of what's killing him is his concussion. There's nothing you can do with that. You know, being hurt is limiting him from being that third down wide receiver that they need.
But that being said, I mean, do you release him and save the cap money? I mean, it looks like they would save if they released him. They would save a decent amount. I mean, you're looking at almost $5 million in cap money that they would save if they released him.
Yeah, I think they should restructure it and say, okay, you know what, let's do this. Now, this was going to blow your mind. When you got, just say if Humphreys left, right, and what do you do with Batson? You know, you got Humphreys that had 22 catches. You had Batson who had 12. You got, you know, Humphreys that had 228 yards. You had Batson that had 100. So they basically had the same production. you know what I'm saying? But the only thing that's hurting Humphreys is because he physically can't play. I mean, there's nothing you can do when you get a concussion. You get hit in the head. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
But if you're not available, you know, then what can you do? But I think that Mike Vrabel and J. Rob just have to sit down and say, okay, you know what? Let's break down every game that he's been in. Let's see how productive he's been and go from there. And if they think that they can help him, say, you know what, I know you're making a lot of money, but let's make it half. And if I'm Humphreys, I'm like, yeah, because I don't want to go to another team. Let's go.
Okay. That's an option. That's definitely an option. So we looked at the top three guys now, and I think those are the only guys that you could – you know what's crazy about all of this? I think A.J. Brown is the only receiver that you could say will definitely be on this team next year.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, that's wild, right? But because you can't say Corey Davis will definitely. You can't say Humphreys definitely. And then while we're talking free agents, since we mentioned two in a row, Khalif Raymond. What happens there?
Right now he's in no position to ask for a whole bunch of money. And the one thing that helps Raymond, he's got speed. I mean, he has speed. So teams are going to take a look. The Titans know that he has speed. And I just think that with him, this is no disrespect, and I mean it's in the utmost respect. He can't just be a camp player. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I look good in camp, but then it gets to the season, and I'm not producing.
Yep.
I know it's about opportunities. I know it's about making plays. But when he gets in the game, he's got to make plays. Because if you look at the first game they played last year, he dropped like two or three balls. So you can't do that when you're in that position. So I don't know what they're going to do with Raymond. But then now you have Batson that has 12 catches, 100 yards, and one TD. You got Raymond who had 9 catches for 187. They're about the same. Both speed guys. So one of those guys are going to be here, and one of those guys are not going to be here.
And I really thought that was going to be the case last year. But it wasn't, and they both were here. Let's move on to Nick Westbrook and Kenny, because I think Batson is almost a I think Batson is almost a shoo-in to be here next year, right? So what and you spoke on him, but Westbrook and Kenny, special teams guy, he's scheduled to be a restricted free agent or an exclusive rights free agent, I think it is one of those ERFA. I guess he should be back, right? Because it's special teams.
Yeah, because of special teams. But, you know, you got to start getting some more receivers, and this is my opinion, to where if A.J. Brown keeps getting hurt, you got to have some backup guys. And some of these guys got to come in. Like, Westbrook's a big guy, but he doesn't have the numbers. He had 3 catches for 32 yards. And then you have Hollister, they had 1 catch for 12.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? They're still unknown. They're still unproven. They're still not knowing, can they make plays? I mean, because when you have, you know, have 4 catches amongst 2 guys, what can they do? Yeah, they can play special teams, but you can go out and get somebody else that can do that and pick up a big-time receiver. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with these guys. But the good thing about it is if you bring those guys back at a cheap price and then see what they can do at camp, one of those guys can help you, because I think Westbrook's not a bad player.
I tell you a guy, he's on the practice squad, but I think Marcus Johnson could actually be somebody.
Right.
He could be one of those depth guys to step in. I mean, that's what he did last year for the Colts when Pittman Jr. Went down. So he's someone, 14 receptions, 255 yards last year. Still, you know, not a lot of production, but he's a solid player. So I could definitely see him being someone.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like all those guys are the same. You have 3 or 4 guys that are the same.
Yeah.
But it all goes back to how much value does this guy bring to the team. When I say value, and sometimes not about just production, but it's like, okay, is this guy just a receiver? Can he play special teams? Can he play kickoff? Can he play punt? Can he play, you know, kickoff return? All those things. And that's the reason why I think Raymond is still so valuable, is because he still brings the element of kickoff return if somebody goes down like Evan. So, You know, I don't know what Westbrook can do. I know he can play a little bit of wide receiver. I don't know what Hollister can do. I don't know if he's just a gunner or whatever it is. So whatever those guys bring to the table, special teams-wise, and can contribute, if somebody goes to wide receiver, those are the guys that are going
to
stay.
And that goes back to value for Batson, too, and how he and Raymond are that they're the same. They are literally the same. Raymond may give you a little bit more as far as being a guy that could, you know, play some slot for you, but they are virtually the same. So that being said, looking at this group of receivers that we just went through, obviously Corey Davis, but I mean, do you think that it's Corey Davis or a free agent that they have to sign and they have to sign another one? Do you think like this group needs an addition of at least two players?
No, I think with A.J. Brown and if they keep Davis, I think they should be all right because, okay, look at when some of those guys went down. Batson came in and made some plays. I mean, he scored a touchdown. I can't remember who it was against. They played here. Was it against the Texans? I can't remember. No, it was against Baltimore. I can't remember.
It was either Baltimore or the Browns. It was a late game.
I think it was the Browns. Where he made that catch in the end zone.
It was a crazy catch, too.
It was a crazy catch. But here's the thing, and let me kind of flip-flop a little bit. But this is the reason why I think Raymond might not be here, is because both of them are fast, both of them are, you know, small in stature. But later on in the game, when guys got hurt, you seen Batson in there.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what kind of gives me the idea of, okay, this guy brings more value than you know, Raymond, but they're the same kind of player. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does make sense.
That they trust Batson more. That's what it is.
Right. And the other thing, Batson, even though he's only 5'9", like that guy has the catch radius of someone like 6'2".
That's what I'm saying.
You know, and I think that gives him the advantage. And I think that's why he's a more useful player on the outside. But even still, so if they don't bring back Raymond, I still think they need that vertical guy.
No doubt. Okay, who was in the Wildcat sometime?
Batson.
Did you see Raymond in the Wildcat?
No.
And what does that tell you? That means they trust Batson.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And I think, you know, for that reason, Raymond is going to be gone. So, you know, just like I told Elijah before we jumped on here, I think a guy like Auburn's Anthony Schwartz, you know, someone that you could just put on the outside and just say run. You know what I mean? I think that would be a very useful player. But how about this? And I mentioned I'm going to mention this a bit later, you know, in the show. What about Marvin Jones from Detroit?
To bring him in?
Right. Him or Corey Davis.
I have an all three of them, so if they go like a 11 personnel?
Oh, no, I'm talking about if Corey Davis wants,
Corey Davis is gone?
Yeah.
I mean, see, I don't know. I mean, I just don't want them to start messing up the chemistry of what they have. See, everybody keeps basing that, you know, Davis on his last three games. And I did the same thing. I'm like, well, he's dropping balls. But he had 984 yards.
In 14 games.
In 14 games. And didn't he sit out a game?
Yeah, two.
Two. Come on. What are we talking about? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we got to stop and – not just, you know, it's a league of what have you done for me lately? Because at the beginning of the league, it's like, oh, Corey Davis is back, and he caught two passes. I'm like, come on, man. He's got to get opportunities.
Yeah.
Now, the last three games, he struggled, but he's still producing, and he's still going to get better. He had a lot of things going on. Come on, man, keep this guy, keep the chemistry. Don't bring somebody else in, and it might mess up the chemistry.
And then not to mention what he does for the rushing attack, right, and down the field blocking. So I agree with you. I think he's the guy that they got to figure it out. I just want to see how the numbers fall out. They could definitely afford him, that's for sure, because we looked at in another segment with Mike Herndon, we just the previous one, we looked at, you know, how this team could open up $50 million in cap space. So the whole can't afford this guy and that guy, that's not true. You know, you could kick the can down the line with some restructures and things like that.
Then let's go get it, man. Hey, if they don't sign him, me and you going to get our own team, and we're going to sign Corey Davis.
Hey, there you go, right there. We'll call it Run TMC.
No Robert Parrishes.
No Robert Parrishes, and we'll have the Gazelles on the side of the helmet. That'll be the logo.
Man, you my dude, man.
Hey, likewise, man. I appreciate you, man.
Always.
Next week, we'll hit it up and do it once again.
Let's go, man. Appreciate you, boss.
All right.
All right.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
right. Back from the break. You hear that music, so you know something special is coming up. That's right. What we do each and every week. Normally, you know, I'll go into the Black Book and I'll pull out a fellow NFL Nation reporter. We're going to take it up just one more notch and bring in NFL reporter for ESPN, Diana Russini. Diana, what's going on?
Did you know I was just like a really big Phil Collins fan, or is that just the jam you were feeling today?
You know, every once in a while I get my little social media stalk on, so I, you know.
I like the research. I'm all in now. Yeah, that's actually one of my wedding songs. So yeah, I love it.
That's awesome, and yeah, congratulations on the wedding. I know I've said it in person, but hey, let's say it on the air and just. You're very unique. I don't know any other lady who would have, you know, done a quick segment from her wedding. So that was very interesting. Your husband got a great one on that perspective.
Interesting is a great word. I'm definitely a little strange, a little weird. But obviously with COVID and everything going on, it was really hard to plan a wedding. And the last thing I would ever do is have a wedding during the football season. That was just kind of known. Pretty much since I chose the career that I would never do anything to take away from coverage on the weekend. But it turned out that I kind of had to do it, and we made it work. And it was early in the season, but I have no regrets over it. It was good. It was a fun day, and I didn't really feel like I missed too much, which is sick to say, but I was thinking about it in the limo when we left. I was like, pull your phone up, check the scores.
That's hilarious. And like you said, you did make it work. And that's something that the NFL has had to do this whole season, including the Titans. And you and I both know how things got here with COVID. And as you look back on the past season that the Titans specifically had to go through, what do you make of how they were able to pull it together and win their first AFC South Division title?
I never thought that they would have the kind of season they did. To be transparent with you. And then you throw another layer to it, which is the difficulty of navigating COVID. The fact that they were able to get through that, win as many games as they did, be down as many players as they were, and even just the emotional strain of every day finding out who was positive. I remember a player telling me it was just part of their mornings. It was like, you know, you obviously go take your test, but you know, you have your breakfast, you're getting ready, and you have to wait to get clearance, you know, from their position coach to say, yeah, you can come in today, which they did that for weeks. And the fact that they were able to get out of that and then go as far as they did, it was a successful season. You know better than anybody, you know, ESPN has their eyes on a lot of teams, obviously, in the league, and the Titans just fall under the radar a lot on the national scale. And I think after the last two seasons now, with this John Robinson, Mike Vrabel sort of regime, with Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, I think after these past two seasons, they have proven that they deserve to be in really top conversations.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because they score so many points, and that was always the thing. Hey, well, you know, they're not an exciting team to watch, but they have become that. But Arthur Smith is gone. So there's going to be a change of power, I guess you could say, to use an inauguration type of term. When you look at the offensive coordinator side of things, are there any particular options that come to mind? Or do you think they'll go internally? What are your thoughts?
I'm thinking that their style is to go internally because they've had so much success with the system that they do and what they run. And anytime you listen to the press conferences and you can kind of read the tea leaves that, yes, Arthur is phenomenal what he does, but there's a lot of guys on that offensive side who are part of that. It's not just Arthur, not taking away from anything he's done. You know, but I do think this will be one of the most challenging off seasons for this team collectively, starting with obviously Arthur Smith being gone. Will or, you know, won't they bring in a defensive coordinator if they think they need it? And then, you know, we haven't even gotten into where they need to improve in terms of players, because there's going to be a lot of turnover.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking, what, 20-plus free agents on this team once the new league year starts. So there's a lot of things that they have to navigate. For you, the free agency period with COVID, I mean, you went through one season with it and you broke plenty of stories. How do you think that's going to work this year just as far as having to do that again, you know, going through the process? What is your outlook on it?
I just said to a really good friend of mine in the business yesterday when I had heard that the combine was officially canceled, I said, well, my free agency just got tough. Uh-huh. I mean, it's always hard. You know better than anyone. You love breaking news as well that, you know, it's just really hard to break any story. Nevertheless, a story in the free agency period during COVID-19. It's just your relationships have changed. I haven't seen anybody in person. You haven't seen anyone in person. I've waved, you know, from the stands.
Yeah.
I've had interviews, obviously, pregame and postgame. But, you know, they're 10 feet apart. The conversations last, you know, a quick, hey, what's up? How are you? Good to see you. Okay, we got to go. We have to do TV. Whereas I feel like, you know, you can have a lot of success if you have these relationships. And relationship building has been difficult. And a lot of it is stale and cold even, you know, most of the people and players, coaches, agents, GMs, owners even, you know, it's all over text messages mm-hmm. and phone calls, which, you know, a lot of the work we do is that way. But there is nothing better than sitting at a table with somebody, with an agent, with a coach, and picking their brain. And 99% of it may be off the record, but that 1% that they give you that you can chase down, or maybe even they give you a couple hints to lean towards something, really changes your workflow and an opportunity. And I've definitely been really lucky in the past with the sources that have led me to the water, so to speak. And now it's definitely going to be very difficult. I think it's going to be very agent driven in terms of news getting out there, if not agents putting it out themselves, which we're seeing a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a very good observation. When you look at the Titans and free agency, they're rolling over around $2.2 million. They're going to be up against it. And we mentioned all the free agents that they have pending. Do you see them being active at all on the market?
Here's the thing. They have to be, but I don't think they will be. I think we know that they're going to need players, and they certainly need to beef up a lot of their offense. They could use some key players in the pass rush. We obviously saw what happened this past season with their mm-hmm. attempt to fix that. But they may not have the money unless they get really creative and figure out contractually, which, you know, John Robinson has done in the past. But this is going to be, I think, the hardest offseason for the Vrabel era in terms of him figuring out a way to build this roster and beef it up, for it to be better than what we saw last year or this past season, because I think we can both comfortably say while they won the division, this wasn't a very good team.
Right.
They were okay. They weren't very good.
Yeah. I mean, the defense really struggled. And we're talking to Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL insider. Diana, you've had a lot of interaction, you know, with Coach Vrabel in your time, you know, pre-game, doing the interviews and those things. From a national perspective, what is the perception? What's the view that everyone has on Coach Vrabel?
You know, it's interesting. You know, we do these pregame interviews, and I always want to interview Ryan Tannehill, right? How do you not want the quarterback?
Right.
And from a national perspective, Vrabel is the face of the Titans, and that's the person they want to hear from all the time. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, his success he had in New England and just as a player in general. And, you know, his personality is very strong. But from the way he's viewed, from what I can sense, even the way he's spoken about on Sunday NFL Countdown by the analysts and even on SportsCenter, he's considered to be a really smart coach, a great leader. I would say his biggest sort of knock on him that I've heard in conversations is really just sometimes the stubbornness and just wanting to do it his way. And you've seen it, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've had interactions that aren't always the most comfortable, but I've always had tons of respect, and I actually really enjoy covering him because I think he has a vision He knows what his team wants to be. He knows the identity that he wants them to be. And I think that's half the battle. So many teams don't know what they are. And when you are around the Titans, you know what they are, which that's gigantic. There's so much value there. But now it's really taking that next step of, can he get some players here and coach them up to be better and perhaps try to be the best version of the Titans that we've seen over the last few seasons.
And what about the fans? Because you have a unique standpoint, especially from a national perspective, because you've been on both sides of it, right? You've been adored by the fans, right? And when you talked about Tannehill in camp and you said that don't be surprised if he takes over, and we're talking about a couple years ago, you had to endure the venom from the fans. So what's your perspective on these Titans fans? Are they unique?
Unique is such a sweet way to put it. No, I've grown to love them. They sort of remind me of my cousins, who I don't see that often. But when I do, it's always just a weird experience. I'm not even sure if I like them. But then by the end of the day, I'm like, all right, they're my family. I love them. I love the passion. I admire how intense they are about their team. I just think they lead with their heart too much rather than their head. Mm. And, you know, going back to camp, and it's so funny because that's the one Titans topic over the last few seasons that gets brought up anytime I chat with people from other podcasts and radio stations around the country of, oh man, we remember when you were talking about Ryan Tannehill and everyone was losing their mind. Like, there's no way they're moving on from Marcus. And I felt so good. I just remember going on Get Up and saying it and talking about it. And, you know, when you have sources lined up and you trust these people and it's more than, you know, one or two, and you're going for it, you feel good. But the reaction was just so bad that I remember feeling so uncomfortable about the whole situation of like, wait, they don't want the best quarterback? They just want the guy they like? This doesn't make any sense to me. So that was really my first taste of it. But I've noticed over the last few seasons, they just want to win. I just do think they're very critical of everybody, no matter who it is.
Oh yeah.
And you have to. I used to worry about how I would word things, but I don't anymore because I figure in the end, they really just want the information and they want the story told. They may be emotional, but they really just want to know what if their team is good or not, and collect the things that they need to get to form their opinion and maybe perhaps act crazy sometimes. But if it was up to Titans fans, they would have fired this entire coaching staff
right,
this season.
Right.
I'm like, what? What do you under? So I talked to an agent. I was talking to Buck about this recently. I was talking to an agent recently when I was getting ready for this coaching hiring cycle, and he's a big time agent. And I'm always concerned about that one outside the box firing, right? Every year you see it, the one coach is like, there's no way he's getting fired, and he gets fired.
Yeah.
So I just threw it out there because I'd been covering Tennessee so much. I said, what about Vrabel? He laughed on the phone. He goes, Mike Vrabel? You think Mike Vrabel's going to get fired? I said, no, I'm just saying, could you see it happening? He goes, Mike Vrabel would get, the phone call would come in or the meeting would happen. He wouldn't even be off the facility and he'd already have his next head coaching job.
Yep.
You know, so I think sometimes what happens is you forget the goods that you have because you're seeing other things that perhaps may be better, but the grass is not always greener.
Seriously, that's big facts right there. Before I get you out of here, I have four girls, right? And I love them all and I want them to strive to be the best. And you've reached a point in your career where you're among the best. So being a woman, right, a lady in this industry of football, as you know, is male dominated, what will you say to younger girls, you know, young ladies out there who are striving to make their mark and get into football? What would be the best piece of advice you would give them?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's really kind words. And also, I think it's one thing to say that you respect a colleague, but to say, you know, it's something that you'd want to share with your daughters. That means a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I fall back really on how I was raised. I grew up with really strict parents that really demanded a lot out of me. And they saw early on in my life that I was talented in different things, sports, and I was good at school. And my dad used to just always say to me, you know, you're going to get older and be around people that are going to be better than you. You're going to have to figure out who you want to be. And you're going to be the hard worker. You're going to be the one that's going to outwork everybody. And it really took me to learn what that meant. Everyone says they work hard. But what does working hard mean? Mm. And it took failing a lot. It took taking chances and being vulnerable and making mistakes and being comfortable with it. And I learned that I was able to really take steps in this business by being the most prepared person, by being the smartest in terms of what I need to know in that moment. And then always the relationships. There's no way in heck I could be where I am without relationships, whether that means people in the business that have helped me, fellow journalists, other people in my life who have really taken time to teach me the right way to do it and not give in to the cheating way, the easy way. There's so many ways you can cut corners. And it was tempting, especially when you're not making a lot of money, especially for women. You know, you want to use your looks. You want to put your stuff on Instagram, and maybe that's the way you can get some traction. And it's never the way. Never. Mm. Putting a picture of yourself in your bikini gets you nowhere. Mm. Breaking a big story and getting it right, that gets you everywhere.
Mm. I love it. I love it. I will definitely. All young ladies out there, I want you to hear that, you know, because I couldn't have said it better. And I appreciate you, Diana, for sharing that wonderful advice, because that's something that you have to pass it down, right? You get up to a certain level, you got to send that elevator back down, and that's what you're doing. So I appreciate that. Thanks for coming on, talking some shop. Hopefully at some point we'll cross paths, maybe virtually. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I appreciate you.
Of course. I love it. I love your work. I think always the biggest compliment you can get as a reporter is when players and coaches read you. And I know for a fact that the Titans staff, they read you, which should tell you everything. So congrats to you on another fantastic season.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD. All my diamonds shine, cause they really
diamonds. That bitch is a lion, they be really trying. Yeah, here we are. Final segment, wrap this thing up. I had to do the really, really from Kevin Gates with the AJ Brown intro. Kevin Gates is one of AJ Brown's favorite artists. So, you know, we'll make that connection. And, you know, that's actually what I was saying when I saw AJ Brown's IG live the other day. I was really, really. But, I mean, you know, that's a part of his connection, right? He has a connection with the fans. And he feels that it's a part of his job to interact with you guys. And I think that's really cool. And obviously the procedure, right? He had a procedure on his knees. And when you look at that, because this happened early. I mean, I don't know why people aren't talking about this. But if you remember back in camp, was it the second week of camp? He tweaked his left knee. And he was out for a couple of days. He came back. He had that. And I remember talking to Nate Washington about it. You know, when we had him on the show, he was talking about the, the band that he had on his knee. It's an arthritis type of band, you know, to kind of fight those type of conditions. He toughed it out, played in the season opener. And then it was a play. It just hit me. Wow. And I was trying to think of this yesterday. It just hit me when it happened. Kareem Jackson came down. It was a screen, and Kareem Jackson came down on the screen and kind of fought through Brown's block to make the tackle. And that's when the other knee got hurt, and it just stayed with him. I don't know what condition he was in, or if he was in a right frame of mind to make a definitive statement like they told him that he was going to be out. After week two. He did miss week two. You know, he didn't play that game. But he managed to fight through it and continue to play. And you knew the guy was hurting, because it was always like every game he'd make a catch. Because the ankle injury, too.
He had a lot of it. He had couple different things. He played banged up.
He was banged up. You know, and you would see him after a tackle get up and grimace. And he would either jog it off back to the huddle, or he just had to jog that thing off the field and then come back a play or two later. So you got to give that dude props, man. You got to. This is what Titans fans, I believe, have been waiting for. That number one, that absolute dog at receiver. And that's what Brown is, man. That's what he is. I mean, 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns on two banged up knees, a less than ideal situation with the ankle. But he still said, come on, Baltimore Ravens, you guys are going for a ride. Come on, linebacker Patrick Queen. You gonna bounce off of me, and we gonna go to the end zone. That play, you know,
he
what
took
I mean?
On like six of them. Yeah,
took them on. Just and I wish Chris Berman, you know, would have done that play, because you know, like how he used to do Mike Allstott, you know, when he did the play by play on that. But I wanted to take this, just give him props, you know, because too many times you see a player getting injured, and teams, or rather fans, get on him for that. I think it's time to get on a player and you know, give him his props for fighting through. So shout out to A.J. Brown. Next time, make sure before you get on IG, you're in a better state of mind. But, hey, man, it was entertaining, and you're an entertainer. So that's you. I guess you did what you needed to do. Before we get out of here, you know what we have to do, man. It's the show still goes on, right? We still have to do what we do each week. Let me get that music. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. That's what I'm doing. I think it's really interesting, right? Because I'm blowing the whistle on the league, on the NFL. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around this Eric Bieniemy situation and understand what the deal is. And it's just really interesting because it seems like, you know, when I talk to somebody about it, they'll have this. Okay, well, he doesn't call the plays, which is false, because he has called plays. And, you know, when you mention that, right, and then you mention how he's involved with the play design and how their sudden emphasis, or not emphasis, but embracing the run over the last couple of years has led to them, you know, help them become more balanced and be a Super Bowl team, and this year a contending Super Bowl team. That has a lot to do with Bieniemy. But the ultimate one is when I bring up, okay, well, Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy, why didn't that not calling the plays apply to them? Mm-hmm. Even though Doug Peterson called plays in the second half, mind you, you know, but it didn't apply to Peterson. So it's just, once you bring that up, the goalposts shift to, okay, well, he has off the field stuff. Okay, I present to you Exhibit A, Jacksonville Jaguars, Urban Meyer. So
surrounded in controversy. Everywhere he's gone.
Everywhere. And not just him, but his players. I mean, we don't need to get into all that, right?
It'd take all day.
So I'm not here to throw slander on Urban Meyer's name. I love the fact that he got an opportunity in Jacksonville. I'm just saying, use the same glasses when you're looking at Eric Bieniemy. That's all I'm saying. And it's just unfortunate that he hasn't gotten a job. So I'm blowing the whistle on the league, because the guy is the offensive coordinator for one of the best offenses in the league. Yeah, okay, so what? Patrick Mahomes is there. That doesn't mean that he's not bad, right? It doesn't mean that you know, Bieniemy's bad. It means that he is doing an excellent job. And when you have Mahomes vouching for him, you don't hear him. Here's the other deal. Mm-hmm. You don't hear him coming out and vouching for Mike Kafka. Not to take anything away from Mike Kafka, but he's coming out and vouching for Eric Bieniemy.
Andy Reid, too. Andy Reid has been his biggest, most vocal supporter.
To the thousandth power. So that's my weekly whistleblowing. You know what I mean? I got my Eric Snowden on. So, yeah, man. Elijah, I appreciate you making this show happen. And I appreciate each of you for tuning in. We're going to keep it going. Got the Senior Bowl. Matter of fact, we're going to do the show from the Senior Bowl next week on a Wednesday. I'll have that done. I think I'm going to talk to Jordan Reed from the Draft Network.
Ooh,
we'll get him on. That'll be one of the segments. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to continuing our interaction with each of you. We appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.